Deuteronomy chapter 6. Now this is the commandment, the statutes and the judgments, which the Lord your God has commanded me to teach you, that you might do them in the land where you are going over to possess it, so that you and your son and your grandson might fear the Lord your God to keep all his statutes and his commandments, which I command you all the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged. O Israel, you should listen and be careful to do it, that it may be well with you, and that you may multiply greatly, just as the Lord, the God of your fathers, has promised you, in a land flowing with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your might. These words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. Then it shall come about, when the Lord your God brings you into the land which he swore to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you, great and splendid cities which you did not build, and houses full of all good things which you did not fill, and hewn cisterns which you did not dig, vineyards and olive trees which you did not plant, and you eat and are satisfied. Then watch yourself, that you do not forget the Lord who brought you from the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall fear only the Lord your God, and you shall worship him and swear by his name. You shall not follow other gods, any of the gods of the peoples who surround you. For the Lord your God, in the midst of you, is a jealous God. Otherwise, the anger of the Lord your God will be kindled against you, and he will wipe you off the face of the earth. You shall not put the Lord your God to the test, as you tested him at Massah. You should diligently keep the commandments of the Lord your God, and his testimonies, and his statutes, which he has commanded you. You shall do what is right and good in the sight of the Lord, that it may be well with you, and that you may go in and possess the good land which the Lord swore to give your fathers, by driving out all the enemies before you, as the Lord has spoken. When your son asked you in time to come, saying, "What do the testimonies and the statutes and the judgments mean, which the Lord our God commanded you?" Then you shall say to your son, "We were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt, and the Lord brought us from Egypt with a mighty hand. Moreover, the Lord showed great and distressing signs and wonders before our eyes against Egypt, Pharaoh and all his household. He brought us out from there in order to bring us in to give us the land which he had sworn to our fathers. So the Lord commanded us to observe these statutes, to fear the Lord our God, for our good always and for our survival, as it is today. It will be righteousness for us if we are careful to observe all this commandment before the Lord our God, just as he commanded us."
Before I begin, any thoughts, comments, questions? Bill.
Statutes and judgments. What's the difference on that?
Okay. You missed last week.
Yeah.
All right. Any other comments?
Obviously, they discussed that last week, and we both missed it, Bill.
Let's see if anybody remembers what I said. So the question was asked, what is a statute? And what is a judgment?
Statute is something that's, term in Hebrew is cut.
That's
so it's
right.
Like cut into stone.
Then hacked. The Hebrew word is hacked. That's what the word statue means, it's been hacked. What do they do when you write in Hebrew on a stone? Bang, bang. Cruciform. And that's how the commandment was written. So what that means, we call statutes, is that which is written. All right? And those statutes, and don't get confused with commandments, it's a little different word. And those statutes, Bill, it's what's being, quote, hammered into your heart, chiseled, and into your mind, in order for the second, covenant will be completed. It's incomplete if it's not hashed, written down. You know, we said, I'll write my commandments in your heart and your mind, right? And that's what this, so we go on just for first right now is the statute. So statute is one thing. What is judgment?
It's a decision.
A decision been made. Simple as that. I have made a decision. This is my decision. It must be my decree. This is how it will be carried out. This is my judgment. Okay? So he says, now when you take my statutes and judgments, every time in Hebrew, by the way, when you come up to read the Torah, those two words are constantly said one right after the other. Over and over and over again. So both those things are very, very important with God. So we know that, right? Judgment is what?
Decision.
Decision, right. And what comes to God's decision is always going to be a just one. It's never going to be an unjust one. When I make one, it can be very well be unjust first, and I might have to backtrack it in order for it to be just. But, you know, I'd say that's the difference between those two words. Okay? Now, what does the word command mean?
That's a direction.
A direction. Someone has given you a direction, given you a course.
Yeah, because, you know, sometimes it's a bit confusing between judgment and a direction, but the judgment is like deciding between you. You have a kind of a situation, and it's usually based upon the law. So
correct, on statutes.
Right. So right. You have to make a, not necessarily a compromise, but you have to kind of tweak it.
Right.
To adjust.
Commandments more like orders. You know, commanding general, give an order. He commands. That's why he's called commanding general, because he gives orders. The Ten Commandments are what? They're orders. Mm-hmm. So that's the simplicity of the word when you think about the Ten Commandments. Those are orders. He's called commander in chief, right? Commander, first commandment was, thou shalt have no other God before me. Second commandment was, you don't take my name in vain. Third commandment was, those are orders. That makes sense? It's a little simplicity of the explanation, but I think sometimes the simplicity of the explanation is a whole lot better. Does that answer your question?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good. Now, as we begin with this particular chapter, when you go into Hebrew, it's kind of confusing at first because it says here, this is the commandment. I'm going to explain about commandment. This is the order. Alright, this is the order. And what was the order to be given? Well, in Hebrew, since they don't have any punctuation marks in it, you have to kind of read between the lines exactly who he said. Because basically he has said, let's read it here. Now this is the commandment, and this is the King James Version, the new King James Version, whatever that means. And these are the statutes and judgments which the Lord your God has commanded to teach you. So basically, Moses is saying, this is the commandment that God told me that I am to teach you the statutes and the judgments. That's basically the simplicity of that first sentence, okay? Not too hard to understand that one, right? All right. I'm going to put this on the side because that's last week's stuff, and I'll probably forget, pick it up instead of this one. Remember last week, I told you, Shema Israel, it first showed up in chapter 4, and then it showed up in chapter 5, and it showed up in chapter 6 here, but all three say the same thing first. What are they supposed to Shema?
The Lord your God, the Lord is one.
No.
What?
You are the Shema. Be careful to observe what I have told you, what you've been told. In other words, you listen to the statutes and you listen to the judgments. All three begin with that particular statement. So the primary thing that Moses is trying to get across for three times now, before he comes into this one, which we are very, very familiar with, you know, the Shema, the saying. But basically, the first three times now he says, I want you to Shema, O Israel, the statutes and the judgments. Now, anytime God says things once, it's important, right? When God says it twice, it's kind of like twice important. When he says it three times, it's that's it. It's hard as rock. Nothing changes. All right, so we look at the Ten Commandments, and they are orders, if I could use that terminology, of how we ought to live and conduct our life. And like a commanding general, all right, what if you don't follow out the orders?
Consequences
will come about. All right. And sometimes those consequences are deadly. Correct? Especially in a warfare. All right. So we start with this. Now I want to go down to the most important verse everybody seems to know. And Shema Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord is one. Now I want to be careful when I'm telling you this here, if you can't understand. I don't want to change your mind or thinking of what the word Echad means. I know back in your background, you know that means a unity or a combining of two things together or a unity of many things together, and it makes it Echad. But that's not the only meaning for it. It also means, it's very important to understand it means one. And it's not just because that's what it says. I want you to turn to Genesis chapter 1. And we want to go to verse 5. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. So the evening and the morning were the Echad. It doesn't say first in Hebrew. It's the Echad. The next one, second day, it is what we have, and our word would be the second in the third word. And fourth and fifth, those are actually Hebrew words that actually says there is a second place, a third place, a fourth place, a fifth place, and so on and so forth. But there's only one place for number one. All right? It's not first. It is, that's the beginning. So I got to keep that part in mind. When you think of the word Echad, it does not necessarily refer to a union. And even though, and I don't get me wrong now, when a man is to leave his mother and his father and be joined into his wife, they are to become what? Echad. Okay? Not a union of two different people, but one. Okay? That's very important to keep this part in mind, because as we go along with this thing about the love of the Lord your God with all your heart, but we need to kind of pay attention a little bit closer here, if you don't mind. Another way, in which verse 4, and Deuteronomy there, 6th chapter, I'm going to word it differently so you'll be able to have an idea what I meant when I think and I say one, or Echad. Okay? And when you think of the first day of the week, it's Echad. All right, keep that in mind. The Lord is our God. The Lord alone is Echad. The Lord alone. There's nobody else. That's number one. That makes sense? So you look at this. Yes.
Is that like saying, Ha, Mashiach? Like he is the anointed one? Not just an anointed one, he is the anointed one.
That's correct. You have to have that specific thing. So we talk about that God is Echad. We're not just talking about a unity of what? How many gods do you want? Put it together, make it a one unity one. No, we're talking about number one. Okay. There is no other. Yes.
Well, I mean, that's what he's already, when Moses already got to in Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 35, when he says, you know, that the Lord is God, besides him there is no other.
Right. We're not there yet.
This is a case that he's been building for quite some time now.
And it's constantly with this new generation. But you remember, there's a reason why he constantly is reminding this new generation something. It's because he wants something very, very established in them. What does Moses want established in them? To Shema Israel, the statutes and the judgments, okay? He wants to get that. Yes, Bill.
No, I'm just saying.
Yeah. You know, so he wants that well established within them that they understand that your life is to be lived by when you cross that Jordan River. These are the commandments. These are the orders. When you cross over, this is how you will fulfill my orders. Can you understand what I'm saying? And so the same sense we have here, when he says that I want the Lord your God as one, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. The big words. What does heart mean? What does soul mean? What does strength mean? All Hebrew words. We're going to look at some Hebrew words.
Heart is spirit. Mind, a soul is mind, will, and the emotions. And all your strength is your physical.
All right. Any more input? Okay, the Hebrew word for heart is levav. L-E-V-A-B. That's the Hebrew word. And it comes from, it's the root word, comes from the verb to be enclosed. To be enclosed. Now what does that mean? How is your heart to be enclosed?
As I recall, it comes from the root word meaning womb.
Yeah, well, womb is also enclosure. We're talking about the word itself, of and by itself, means enclosed, an enclosement. So inside your heart there's an enclosure. It's enclosed with something. So you learn to love the Lord your God with all your enclosurement. What you are enclosed with. What I say about heart? Heart is the number one thing that does what?
It motivates you
to do things, right? It's not necessary to, no, the heart is deceitful above all things, but God did not create it evil. It became that way. Okay, because man decided he liked it evil rather than he liked it good. All right. So your heart, when you love the Lord your God with all your heart, your enclosure, what is inside of you, what motivates you, what moves you to do something. I'm sorry, what?
Your passion.
Your passion is a good word. The reason why you do what you do is because of why? Well, why do you do what you do?
Your heart
motivates you. So we got to keep that part real clear. And the heart is something that's enclosed within you. It is part of you. Yes.
I might make this really complicated. How would you differentiate the difference between, in essence, looking at heart in that manner, and then also the flesh? Because the flesh also motivates and leads in the same manner the heart does, it would seem.
That's lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and pride of life. That's different than the heart.
Okay.
The heart doesn't do the lusting. The flesh does.
Right.
Alright, so we're looking at that. It's a different kind of category altogether. To separate the two is that your flesh, the heart's going to respond to something.
Right.
Okay, it's going to respond to a command, the Ten Commandments. It's going to respond to a statue. It's going to respond to evil. It's going to respond to things that your eyes love to look at. That's what I'm saying. If the heart is the motivating, obviously not motivating factor, it's the thing that causes you to do something. You understand what I'm saying?
If you the core.
We're in the very core of it, because that's what God has in mind. First thing He tells you to do, what? Love the Lord your God with your heart. Not your flesh, not your mind, but your heart. So that's the first priority. The next one is the soul. Now the Hebrew word is what?
Nefesh.
Nefesh. What does nefesh mean?
Core as far as the animating part of you.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the, because, when God breathed into man and made him, Nefesh Chaim,
correct.
He became a living soul.
Living one.
It was soul. Something that needed to become moving somewhere. So
become a soul that had to come alive.
Yeah, it was.
It's a really odd terminology there in Hebrew, but in a true sense, God did not breathe in the nostrils of a dog, even though the dog had breath. Did God breathe into a squirrel?
Well, although.
Well, that'd be a question.
In the flood, though, it said that everything that had, the breath of life.
Nefesh. Breath of life. Right.
That was nefesh. Claiming.
But that's different than the breath of God's life. That's different.
Which is the spirit.
Okay. We're talking about something entirely different. Well, what if, come to the close of what a nefesh is, it dog means to breathe. Also means to refresh. Quite interchangeable within Hebrew. It means to breathe as well as to refresh. How often do you go outside, you want a breath of fresh air? Okay? It's the very same kind of concept. So when you want to refresh your breath, what do? You go to a place where the air is refreshing. Simple little Hebrew word has two meanings to it. Now, what breath should we bring it in? We need to bring in the breath of the eternal God. We need to bring in that breath that He breathes, because His breath is refreshing. It gives life. If you walk out in a room that's really bad, odor, you're breathing all right, but it can kill you. So you have to escape that area and breathe in, refresh your soul, refresh your breathing ability to have good air in you to purge out the bad air, right? Simple little expression between those. Last one, strength. Now I was surprised, I'll be honest with you, when I looked this one up. Strength. Very interesting Hebrew word. It means move quickly. Move rapidly. Move as fast as you can. Vehemently. With vigor and vitality. With life. So you learn to love the Lord your God with what?
All your strength.
The strength means what?
Move quickly.
In other words, you're at a... What does that mean in English? It means a strange word. So we have to say, love the Lord your God quickly, speedily, rapidly. That doesn't make sense. What do you think the spiritual concept means?
Without hesitation.
Say what?
Without hesitation.
Okay. Real simplicity of the terminology. You will love Him with all your heart, your soul, and without hesitation. Just do it. Just get there speedily. I found that very interesting when I found that in Hebrew. I started looking up at the places that use, and it should mean rapidly or move quickly or run. I said, well, that's interesting terminology. Don't hesitate. It's like sometimes people, careful what I'm saying here, they're not quite sure if God is really telling them the truth. That's hesitation. That's hesitation. How many times have you probably heard someone say, very strange, I've heard this many, many times, well, I had to forgive God. That's a really odd statement. When you finally forgive God what he did to you, then you'll be able to love him quickly. No, that's not how it works. But it's a really odd statement. Have you ever heard anybody say that before? Yeah, it's really strange, isn't it? Really strange statement. What does that mean? So we love God without any hesitation. That's what strength means. All right? Very fascinating Hebrew word. And the reason why they couldn't put it in English that way, because it didn't add up right. All right. Verse 6, and these are the words which I command you today shall be in your heart. First place. First place where anything is to be placed starts with the heart. Then it moves on to the soul or the nephesh, the breathing. Then it moves on to without hesitation. Because the heart is what's going to motivate you. Now, what would you in your life, don't have to answer the question, I'm just asking this question. In relationship to God, what would motivate your heart to love God? What would motivate you, your heart, that you will take in the breath of life? What motivation in your heart would start you to say, I'm not going to hold back. I'm going to do it
fear,
now.
Fear, love.
Forgiveness.
Knowing
his character.
Knowing what?
Knowing his character.
Knowing his character. That's true.
And trusting him. Your mind, your will, and your emotions would influence that.
Okay. Knowing the statutes and the judgments, that will motivate you. Because his statutes are holy and pure. His judgments are holy and pure. That should be a reason of and by itself for your heart to say, I want holiness and purity within me. And the only way that love, that way your heart gets motivated, just have a minute, is when your heart sees and understands God by and through his statutes. Only you know is when you see and understand God through his judgments. Then you say, wow, what fantastic statutes! I want to live by them! What fantastic judgments! I want to live by them! And I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to start tomorrow. I'm going to do it right now. Without hesitation. Does that make sense?
And that's,
you had a comment?
I think you kind of answered that, because a lot of people will ask the question when they look at this stuff and go, why? Why should I do this?
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting now. So we have this whole volume, this big, huge picture of the heart. And the heart is the very first thing he talks about. And so we should think about our heart. And we should, not physical one, I mean our, the one that's enclosed within us. Yes.
As far as the question of why and the looking into what is the pure nature and the depth of the instructions that he passes along, thus, then you're seeing the heart of God.
Yeah.
That is, I guess, what the whole point of looking into the law of God is all about?
Yes. Once you look at the laws of God, the statutes, I'll call them statutes and judgments, not just the statutes, not just the judgment, but look at them both combined together. It's like one word right after the other. You can't leave one behind and let the other one come and ignore the first one, or vice versa.
Well, they have to be.
They have to be. They don't work anyplace else. You can't divide them.
Well, because if you had statutes that said one thing, and then the judgments based on the statutes showed a completely different kind of person, it would be not the same picture.
The God is really a God of confusion, right?
Yeah.
And we know he's not. All right? Okay, let's go on now. Verse 8 I want to talk about. I think that's what I want to talk about next. We're moving on pretty good. Bind. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and you shall be on a frontlets between your eyes, and you shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. A lot of words in there. Now, what are we supposed to do first?
Tie them on your
bind. What does word bind mean?
Fastened.
Okay. Fastened to where?
Your hand.
What does your hand do?
Your action.
Your hand should be doing the work of the living God. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
If it's bound to your hand, you're going to be doing the statutes that are holy and just and good. And you're going to be doing the judgments which are holy, just, and good. So it's what you do with your hands, what you build, what you create, what you form. It's not what just physically on your hand, because that does not do any good whatsoever. Because you know why? You have to take it off now and then and wash your hand.
It basically means that
this is something that's going to be all of your entire life. I'm sorry, what?
It means you live what you're...
We'll get far. But physically, the first thing is your actions.
Right.
Okay, first thing is your actions, the first thing, because that's what hand refers to. What you do with your hands. Next one. What's the next one he says to? Now, of course, it says as a sign on your hand. We're going through that one. On the frontlets between your eyes. Now, why? We're talking about the statutes and the judgments are to be what? Between your eyes. Why between the eyes?
So that you see them.
No. That's good. I like it. You're very, very good with that. Okay.
So what?
Center of thought.
Right. That's your vision. All right. The statutes and judgments are your vision. That's what you see. First, it's what you do. Then, it's what you see. And what do you see between your eyes? You should see that which is just and holy and good, which are the statutes and the judgments. So I'm going to go over the statute and judgment because it's really, really important. Because the Ten Commandments is part of a agreement. Okay, it's part of the covenant that he made with him at Mount Sinai. But we're talking about statutes and judgments. That's a little different, isn't it? So when God says, I can write my laws on your heart, what kind of laws is he referring to? The Ten Commandments or the statutes? Ever thought about that? He's going to put the statutes. Because the Ten Commandments are that which affects the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life. But the statutes is the eternal. His judgments is the eternal. That's to describe God in any other term, the best two terms you could always use, and you'll see that written in the Torah over and over again, especially this section, statutes and judgments, causes you to have one thing in mind. What is it? What is it that God is carving in, putting into our hearts and to our minds? If you live for eternity out of the flesh, why do you need, thou shalt not have any other God before me?
You're already there. Yes.
So you're saying the statutes and the judgments go beyond just the Ten Commandments. It's much bigger.
Much bigger.
The Ten Commandments fall in there somewhere.
Yes.
Okay, I get it.
The book of Romans explains it very carefully.
Right, okay.
Because he says there is a righteousness of the law.
Right.
Which is just and holy and good. But he says a righteousness which is apart from, separate from, and has not connected to the law. That is the righteousness of God, which is above the righteousness of the law.
Okay.
And the righteousness of God is, we'll get to there, is in this chapter, is the statutes and the judgments. So you got to find out, what does God think? What is it that God wants us to think?
You're not reading the Bible.
The problem between, yes, you have to go that word. Rest.
Right. Okay.
Well, you also learn that by seeing his judgments.
You see by his judgments.
His judgments. Okay.
Well, that's why you see it. And you see the gorgeous. They're fantastic.
Well,
full of wisdom.
In the judgments, you also see justice and mercy.
That's right. According to the Torah. Yes.
You know, Richard, I've just always found it interesting that you've really got a choice. You can either have the commandments of the Lord and the instructions of the Lord on your forehead and on your hand, or you actually have the mark of the anti-Messiah. Okay.
There's one more place you must mark these.
Yeah.
All right. On the what?
On the
doorpost. Of course, you know what doorpost is in Hebrew, don't you? Mezuzah. I mean, that's the word means doorpost, nothing else. Now, Daniel, some years ago, gave extremely good, you won't remember it, he remembers it, but about there are four doors, four entryways.
Yes, I remember that.
You remember that one? Extremely well done. And if you were able to see or hear what he had to say, you'd get a really fantastic picture of how God works. But in that entryway, into your home, into your house, spiritually speaking now, what should the people who come in contact with you be very obvious to them? The statutes and the judgments. That's what should be very, that's what you want to quote, portray to the loved ones, to the world. You want to preach the gospel of the kingdom of God? Have the doorpost. Have the mezuzah. And they would see it. They're not seeing a little thing we put on our door that you may remember or may not remember. If you're a dedicated Jew, you remember to go up there and give it a good kiss, you know. But it's how you live. They'll come into your world. And if they see, they should see, if I can use that word see, or they should be observant of, and they will know, that they could come into your home. Why would they want to come into your home? My spiritually speaking is because if the statutes and judgments are there, they will see the glory of the living God. That's what they will see. And they will want to enter in there just as much as when you came to understand. I'm heading that direction with no hesitation. Right? Do you understand the doorpost? Okay, it's for other people to see, not this little thing that's on your mezuzah, your doorpost, that is a physical house, but when they enter into your world, your life, who you are, what you do, what you think, what you say, how you talk, how you act, they should see the statutes and the judgments. Which is a righteousness. We'll get to this point because it's the last thing he said here in this chapter. So if anything Moses is hammering into these people is, yes, there was a covenant that we made with God and it's the Ten Commandments. And commandments are orders. Now those commandments do not conflict with the statutes or the judgments. But they have been, Apostle Paul said what? Added.
Because of
okay. Added. They weren't there before.
They were added because of sin and transgression. Trying to show the people this is the commandment of how not to sin. Thou shalt not. And all of a sudden, that's the commandment. And you say, okay, I got that one. But you know, the lust of the flesh, lust of the eye, the fire of life is always in the way. I'll wake up here. Okay. Now we'll go on to verse 12. Where am I to work? Yeah. It's one of those warnings. Yes, Bill.
That's kind of like what Susan was saying about when he blesses us so much, we tend to, the nation turn
to forget.
Yeah. Yes, it's a constant warning.
Yeah.
Okay, when God abundantly blesses you, you've got to not, eyes must not focus on the blessings. They focus on the blessings. There's no statutes and there's no judgments. There's the lust of the eyes developing. You start asking God for blessings. Bless me with, you know, wonderful health. Sounds good. Bless me with a wonderful job. Sounds good. Bless me with... Those are all things of the flesh because they will perish. They are not enduring things. They'll pass away. Your heart, your soul, and your go do it now should be primary. All right. Verse 12. Beware lest you forget. Now, how do we remember? And just in case you forget, what does God have us do for us to remember?
Celebrate the feast.
Celebrate the feast. It's a really, 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 really big one, isn't it?
Keep the Sabbath days.
Keep the Sabbath days. It's a very, very big one. What else?
Congregate on the Sabbath
day. Congregate on the Sabbath day.
Teach the law and, or the statutes and to the children.
Oh, you got it. You get it there, you know. Because why? It says your father, I mean, your grandson, your son and your grandson, and probably on to the great... Third to the fourth generation. Okay. It can be a blessing or it could be a cursing with God. But if you keep the statutes and the judgments, it'll be a blessing. Okay. Let's go on the next one. I've got until what? 5 minutes?
Whatever.
I want to get down to, where am I at now? Oh, wow. I guess this is my notes. Because he says there, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, of the house of bondage.
Where's
it? That's verse 12 still. Now, in our world today, in the 21st century, I get them all confused. You know, you get old, you're allowed to get, you have had the permission to get confused. I forget. Oops! Don't want to forget something, though. Statutes of judgments. I gotta forget what year it is. That's okay for me. What is bondage all about?
That can be the physical, mental, spiritual bondage.
Go ahead.
Which just means being bound.
Oh, yeah, bound in...
Slavery.
In anything, but in this case, slavery.
Enslavement. Enslavement to what?
Sin. To
commitment.
The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life. All right?
Would you consider a Nazirite vow a type of bondage, though?
Oh, that's a different issue.
Different issue, okay.
Oh, yeah, different issue. He's coming out of...
Right.
Bondage. That's why he's taken this vow.
Okay,
that's an entirely different thing altogether. We won't go... That's in Numbers. We're going to do it on him right now. Hey, I like these questions. I like these questions. That's what I'm here for. Right? I'm a teacher more than a preacher. Anyway, how is Egypt likened to the bondage of sin? How is Egypt like a...
It was the attractiveness to the children of Israel for 400 years.
And that's not completely true.
Oh, because when they first came in, they
the
were coming from
the what?
The wealth of Egypt.
The wealth of Egypt. The reason why Moses left, he chose from the bondage of the wealth of Egypt. The beauty of Egypt.
Joseph's
son. Same issue, okay? As you can get trapped into, what was the land that the Israelites were allowed to live in?
Israel.
The best.
Land of what?
Goshen.
Which was the best land of all of Egypt. I mean, talk about, were they really in bad off shape? Oh, they had a wonderful, what did they complain about when they left it? There is no onions, there's no leeches, there's no complain, cause all that was what? Left behind. See, we have a picture of Sesame DeMille's. We don't have a picture of what's written. So we have to kind of take a look at this thing of God, if God put them into a worse condition, he brought them to a place where there was sometimes water and sometimes no water. Well, the water is so horrible, you couldn't take it. Then, lo and behold, instead of having this wonderful steak dinner with onions and lizard and garlic, you got stuff called what?
Manna.
What's it? Yeah, you got a bunch of what's it? He took away all of those wonderful things that the land of Goshen had for them. All right? Remember, it was only the last generation that was under slavery and bondage. Not from the first, the second, and the third. It was a fourth generation. Exactly what Scripture says. Fourth generation will happen to them.
Was just one generation?
Just one generation.
Wow.
The last one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Started at Moses' birth, or there are soon there are. Then they fought bondage. Then there was a Pharaoh that came up who did not know Joseph. And he took over, and it was at the birth of, or near the birth of Moses. And then he put the people into bondage. All right? That's what Scripture tells us. Of course, then Moses didn't come back until he was 80 years old.
It's a long time
of slavery. 80 years is a long time. Or maybe a little bit before then. Because technically it started just before his birth. But you got the picture?
Mm-hmm.